Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW. Let us surprise you.
If we hope to survive in this digital age, we have to think critically about the messages we consume. Someone created those messages for a reason. Let's find out why. Sometimes we just have to ask, what the media? I'm Megan Lynch, and Edward R. Murrow and Gracie Award winner with legacy radio station KMOX in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm joined by Julie Smith, author, instructor, public speaker, and our guide for how to be a savvy media consumer. In our first season, we focused on dissecting messages. This season, transparency from the mouths of the content creators.
So I've certainly lost friends going from being a journalist at Channel 4 for 20 years to being a conservative talk show host where I express my opinions loudly.
That's Mark Cox, Emmy Award-winning TV journalist and now host of the Mark Cox Morning Show on KFTK 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis, Missouri. In this episode, we go to the conservative end of the radio dial.
So, Mark, you were a TV reporter for 18 years. How would you describe the difference between radio and television?
Refreshing, freedom, liberty. I worked actually in television news for closer to 25 years. I was at Channel 4 for almost 20 years, about 19 years. So I've been in St. Louis media since 1993, but I started back in 1987 at smaller markets around the country. And I started out in radio, but it was radio news. And then I stayed in television news in three different markets and ended up here in 1993. So to me, the difference is being able to express the truth. You're able to call things out in a way that I didn't think I could do in television news.
Have you taken any grief for making that jump from being a reporter to being a show host?
No, I don't know. I mean, I've clearly lost friends over it. I mean, honestly, I feel like a lot of people, and maybe this will be controversial, but it's how I feel, cloak their political point of view. They have an invisibility cloak called journalism. And as long as you're cloaked in journalism, you're allowed to allow your liberal bias to show through. The minute conservatism shows through there, it's frowned upon and shut down. I don't know why that's developed over the years. It has. There's no doubt about that. So I've certainly lost friends going from being a journalist at Channel 4 for 20 years to being a conservative talk show host where I express my my opinions loudly about issues that affect the country. So yeah, I probably lost some. I've probably taken a bit of grief, I would say.
So last month, Gallup did a poll asking Americans if they trusted the mainstream media. So two parts to this question. How do you define the mainstream media? And why do you think now that the trust in the mainstream media is at its lowest point since 2016?
Wow. Well, I can say one thing. I think that it wasn't Donald Trump and the fake news claims that led us to this low point, although that probably certainly contributed. 15 years ago, a CBS journalist named Bernard Goldberg, wrote a book called Bias. Everyone listening to this should go back and read it. It's probably available at your library for free. I'm sure it's still in print. I think that contributed to this from the beginning. You know, years and years ago, when I was a local journalist, because I've never worked at the network level, you could start to see some evidence of the way network journalism was going. And Bernard Goldberg argued that the reason there was a disconnect is that the people that ran network news ran in a very small social circle in either New York or LA. Their opinions were completely formed by that social circle, and they had no idea what people in the middle of the country were feeling or experiencing. So, for example, if there's a story on abortion rights, a controversial law, you run straight to Planned Parenthood and you get reaction from them. And anybody that doesn't agree with that is on the outside. I think people started to see that many years ago, and it has only exacerbated itself. So my definition of the mainstream media, to answer part of the question, would be any of the alphabet networks, the regular broadcast networks, and then down the tree into cable news, you know, MSNBC, certainly CNN, they've devolved over the years. It's not what it used to be. It's really not. And I wish I could put my finger on why. I wish when I was in the business, I could have had maybe a little more impact on that. But I couldn't. And I didn't see it as much at the local level. I'm not saying that. But at the network level, it has taken on a point of view, right? I think.
So you have taken on a point of view in your move from television reporting to conservative talk. Tell us about that transition in your career.
I was a baby of the Reagan Revolution. My dad took me to a Ronald Reagan rally at the Coliseum in Cincinnati, the convention center down there, in 1979 when he was running against Jimmy Carter, and Boom, that was it. My mind was blown. He was saying everything that I believed in. I embraced it. I loved it. I was active politically through college. Decided I wanted to go into radio or television. And, you know, as a journalist, you're told to shed your biases when you walk into the room. And it's one reason why I left television news, I'll be honest with you, because you used to go into a news meeting in the morning, one of these editorial meetings, and you'd say, okay, I'm a journalist. I've got sources. My sources tell me there's a big story in this town. Here's what's going on. They'd say, sounds good. Give us a live shot at 6 o'clock, a package for the 10. Go. Fast forward from 1993 to 2012, when I left the business, I'd walk into that morning news meeting. I'd say, hey, I heard about this great story in this town that's going on. This is what it is. Well, it's got to fit our brand, is what I would be told. What do you mean by that? Okay, I've got 6 boxes on the wall. If it doesn't check off 3 of those 6, we're not doing the story, because it's got to be investigative. It's got to be advocative. It's got to have something where it involves you chasing somebody down the street with a microphone. And there's a side of that where if you're advocating for something as a journalist, you're not telling both sides of the story fairly, right? I mean, you're just not. I became very uncomfortable in that environment. Television news shouldn't be a brand. You should go out and cover the story. And what do you think? And what do you think? And here's what the two sides think. And here's the story. That's how I was taught to do it. I don't find it's that way as much as it used to be. I'm not labeling every local journalist that way, or every local journalism organization. This is what I saw in my head going on, and I didn't like it very much. I just didn't appreciate it. So I always had a point of view on politics. I kept that to myself. Now, there were people in the newsroom who knew I was conservative. There were people in the newsroom that I knew were left of center. We would have those discussions occasionally in the newsroom, but I didn't feel like it infiltrated our storytelling all that much. I didn't leave over politics. I left over the fact that I just didn't like the way they were handling journalism anymore. So then coming to radio gave me an opportunity to critically analyze stories, obviously through my lens, which is going to be a more conservative lens, and give my opinion on it. Whereas before, they'd send me to interview Dick Durbin in Illinois, and I'd hear the often half-truths or spin that he was spewing out of his mouth. But as a journalist, it wasn't my job to tell him what he should think. It was my job to record what he had to say and take it back and report it. As an opinion radio host, I can analyze what Dick Durbin says, and I can give my opinion on it. I enjoy that.
Okay, so Mark, where do you get your news? What's your news diet, and what do you recommend to others if they want to be really informed?
Oh, Breitbart. I'm just kidding. I knew what you were thinking, but here's the deal. Here's what you need to understand about me, and I certainly don't represent every conservative talk show host out there, in my opinion. I am an information junkie. The iPhone, the smartphone, is the greatest thing that could ever have happened to me. My wife would argue with that because I can take it with me all the time. If from the time I wake up in the morning when that alarm goes off at 3:04 every morning to when I go to bed at night, if I'm lucky by 9 p.m., I'm reading sources. I'm reading CNN. I'm reading MSNBC. I'm reading Fox. I'm reading Breitbart. I'm reading the BBC and the Daily Mail and wherever I can gather information. And then what I present on whatever the story is through my lens on what that story means or how it should be perceived by my listeners. I consider myself very educated on these issues. I think you have to be. And I tell people on my show all the time, don't you dare use my show as your only source of information. You should be getting, don't just use Channel 4. Don't just use Channel 2. Don't just ever just watch CBS, for example. You've got to have, regardless of where you stand in the political spectrum, you've got to take in as much information as you can and make your own mind up. And it's one of the problems in this country right now. Not enough people do that.
Do you feel like social media has improved or damaged the information society we live in?
Twitter is a cesspool. So damaged. Absolutely. Because, and here's the problem. Just because, I mean, I'll go on my radio show and talk about the fact that one of the biggest problems in this country are low information voters. People who don't find out about the issues till a day or two before the election. Are you kidding me? I mean, who's undecided these days? I don't understand that, because I think if you're paying attention, you know what's going on. And the only thing in the middle of the road is roadkill. It's kind of how I look at it, right? So the problem with social media is that the low information voters gravitate to it. And then they're only getting their news from Twitter or Insta or, you know, whatever else that's distracted them. You know, when I would go over to my elderly mother and hear her talk about something she read on Facebook as a fact, I'm like, a meme on Facebook is not a fact. You can't rely on that as a news source. So it has definitely hurt, and it's hurt the tenor and the content of the conversation in this country.
Well, and it's made the consumption of misinformation so much easier to have.
Yes.
Because, they're not liable. Those platforms aren't liable for anything that gets posted on there. So anything goes and people take it as fact because it's on a screen.
And they filter it.
Yeah.
Filtering it. And that about big tech right now.
I understand that they filtered you this morning.
They did indeed. Thank you.
So tell us about that.
So I am doing a fundraiser through my show and through a local organization called Responder Rescue that helps first responders by raffling off a gun that's been donated by a local gun store. And I went to the gun store yesterday. I took a picture of myself with the gun. It's a Sig Sauer semi-automatic rifle. And I posted the picture on my Facebook page, encouraging people to go to the website and buy raffle tickets to the charity website. And I got a notification that it violated community standards because I was raising money for a charity. Well, that had nothing to do with it. They didn't like the idea that I was holding a gun. That violated community standards. Well, I wasn't doing anything wrong with the gun. I've just shown it to people. I wasn't pointing at the camera. I wasn't just holding it in my arms. How does that violate community standards? And why do they get to decide? That bugged me. Their argument when I challenged them was, and I didn't talk to anyone, just the automatic feedback you get, is that they're on a global platform and they have to be conscious that not everyone shares the same values as us. Well, clearly, I don't share the same values with Facebook because they didn't put me in Facebook jail. They just erased the post like it never happened. So, yeah, I got canceled.
Congratulations. You've been warned now, though, right?
I've been warned. So what I'm going to do today is go repost the picture and see what happens. I may post it as my profile picture just to see if they catch it.
Catch it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the power of conservative talk, because a lot of people would assign a lot of power to conservative talk shows, that they are a major influence for voters and for citizens. What's your view of it? Are you reflecting your audience or are you influencing your audience?
Remember Air America?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know why it failed? Because those points of view were something you could get on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC on a daily basis. You didn't need to go listen to Al Franken for 3 or 4 hours a day to hear somebody who was saying the things that you believed in. That's the reason it was not a commercial success. Conservative radio, starting with Rush Limbaugh, thrived in this country, in my opinion, which is what I do for a living, because people were hearing things. I'll never forget 1988. I'm driving down the highway. I heard Rush Limbaugh for the first time. I have a distinct memory of this. And I'm like, wow, he's saying just what I thought the other day. I hated the argument. People will make the argument, well, you just say that because you heard Rush Limbaugh say it. No, that's what I've always thought. Conservative radio has had explosive growth, and we're all the offspring of Limbaugh, whether we are directly, you know, we're directly listeners of his 30 years ago or more recently, because we have a lot of younger people in the business now. It exists because people were hungry for that, for a point of view that they had in their own heads, and they weren't getting that from the national media. So, I mean, how influential are we, or how reflective are we of a frustration on the part of a lot of people in the middle of America who don't feel like the media represents them anymore? I don't know. I'd like to think I have some influence. I also like to think I give some good advice. And I try to filter and moderate what I know to be the truth, so I can, I certainly try to influence people, and I encourage them to call in and argue with me if they disagree with me. I mean, that's the great thing about it, right? We've lost that in America. You can't have civil conversation anymore. One day a week on my show, on The Bottom Line, I invited a Democrat on the show every day. We talk about the issues of the day, whether it's a city issue, county, state, gun control, eliminating student debt. We have these conversations. People get mad at me, my own listeners. Why'd you have that guy on? Well, because if you don't hear what the other side's thinking, how do you make a decision? How do you make a rational decision? That's what I hope it represents.
What is your demographic? Who are your listeners? What do you know about them?
I was pretty shocked. 2020 was a huge year for talk radio, obviously, in the middle of a presidential election. The mindset in radio is that older white men listen to talk radio. And honestly, our strongest, we had, and you know how the ratings work, Megan, because you know that they're metered, and they grab a handful of marbles and tell you how many are in the jar based on the color in your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's 50 red marbles in there. This is what you're listening to. I don't think it's representative at all of our audience. I really don't. But we had surprising strength in a younger demographic, and a surprising strength in women listening. And I think it's a stereotype anymore to say that it's all 45-year-old, you know, disgruntled white men that listen to conservative talk radio. It's not reflective of the phone calls I get. I can tell you that at all.
Walk us through what it's like to prepare for one of your shows. You said you consume as much information as you can. How do you decide which topics are worth talking about and which ones aren't?
I am my listener. That's how I look at it. Is that maybe as weird as that is? I don't sit down and do 3 hours of rundown planning for my show every day. I consume as newscasters, take a little test for yourself. I'll just throw this out there as a sidebar. Watch Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5 tonight, whatever day you're listening to this podcast. Just watch them. And make a list, if you want to, of what the top stories were on all three of them, 1 through 10. I'll bet that 7 of the 10 stories will be the same, probably.
This almost sounds like a media literacy assignment that I have assigned in the past. You're speaking my language, Mark.
So you're taught in journalism that you get your top story is the thing that's going to have the most appeal, or if it bleeds, it leads, is how they used to do it, right? If there was a bad accident on the highway, even though it didn't affect anybody in Jefferson County or West County, that's the lead because it's low-hanging fruit and it's easiest thing to cover. It's explosive. It's whatever. I don't approach my job like that. I try to look at what's the story that's going on in the country or the city or the county that affects the most number of people who are in my listening audience. If I was listening, what would I want to hear about? That's how I try to stack my show. And it may not be for everyone, but I was a listener to my radio station a long time before I was a host, and I know what I want to hear, and hopefully I'll have a job as long as that works. But that's kind of how I approach it.
The one thing I've noticed about being in the studio with you, Mark, is that you're always on, you're always fired up, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but you're always on it. You're intense about it. And for me, I'm wondering how you keep that up from morning to morning, especially with the hours that you keep.
It can be a little bit of a brain drain, right?
Is there
for 4 hours?
Is there caffeine involved?
Much caffeine. Starting at about 3:15 every morning. Lots of caffeine. It's just a passion. I don't know how else to describe it. I had somebody call me up one day and not all that long ago and said, listen, I've been offered my own show. I've never done this before. What's your advice? And I'm like, it's got to come from here. It's not something you can't. I honestly believe this. You can't just sit down one day and decide you want to be a major league pitcher or a race car driver. You've got to develop those skills to get there. But at the core, you've got to have some passion for it that drives you to do it. And I honestly have to say that's probably it, as much as anything, is that I'm passionate about these issues, and that's what, like, I'm not on my radio show telling you about a new road construction project up here on Olive, or the loop trolley, or something that bores the hell out of me. I'm telling you about things I'm interested in, and therefore that passion can flow through when I talk about it, because I sincerely believe what I say, and I'm not sitting there making things up, and I'm not talking about things that I find boring. I hope that's what brings the passion to it. That answers your question. I hope that's what it is. I think it is.
What's something about you that would surprise your listeners?
Interesting. I collect antique radios. I'm a bit of a antique geek. I love that stuff. I inherited one of those old Philco stand radios from my grandmother when I was a teenager when she passed away. I've kept it all these years. Ed Goodman, who used to work in radio in St. Louis, and I used to run into each other at auctions and estate sales where we were looking for old radios. So that, I don't know, that's one thing that I do that might surprise a lot of people.
I don't know. It seems prophetic to me. I don't know.
I finally ran out of room. My wife said, no more. We have no more room for any more radios. So there are some in closets in my house that are not currently displayed. Yeah.
And you have your own podcast now, which has nothing to do with politics or government at all.
They came to me and said, you should do a podcast. And I said, well, all 4 hours of my show get podcasts every day. I said, I don't want to do what I'm already doing. I said, I love bourbon. Why don't you let me do a bourbon podcast? They're like, oh, we don't have anything like that. Why don't you try it? So, yeah, I have a podcast called The Mash. It's all about bourbon and things that go well with bourbon, maybe cigars or you know, just whatever. We've covered the Bourbon Trail, bourbon clubs. We've talked to master distillers, the one of the only female master distillers in the country at Widow Jane. It's just interesting stories about bourbon. And thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, it's great. I'm enjoying it. I'm on like episode 8 now, I think.
That's Mark Cox, host of the Mark Cox Morning Show on KFTK FM. I'm Megan Lynch with my co-host Julie Smith. What the Media is produced by Odyssey St. Louis from the studios of KMOX Radio in St. Louis, Missouri. Our executive producer is Beth Coughlin. We invite you to visit KMOX.com for more on our media literacy project.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule, automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
we're really doing this.
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.